Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, let us start again, Shabbos Kitchen Part 2. So I need to go back over three things that we left off with last week. One major correction and then two clarifications of things that we spoke about last week. The first major correction is regarding the almond and walnuts. I had it right on the sheet, but because I haven't seen it, it got confusing in my actual presentation. So on your sheets, if you have it in section A, right in the very beginning on page 1, section A, what's that? I can't go. It's toward the top there. Removing peas from a pod, we described as a principal prohibition of what we call dosh or mefarik, separating a naturally grown item from the place from which it grew, because the pod is generally not consumed. Talking about a pod where you don't eat it, so that's the natural place in which it grew, and you know how to separate it. That's like the original prohibition of separating the seed or the wheat kernel from the chaff that surrounds it. So separating the pea from the pod is the same problem. So I have on my list here as well the outer hull of a walnut or an almond. Now, I have it right. That's correct. I didn't say it right because I'd never seen that. When an almond or walnut grows, as many other types of nuts, including coconuts, grow, they grow in a natural shell, which is not normally seen. You don't see it because that's removed by the time it gets to your table, where you're only left with the actual shell that you're used to seeing, the almond and the walnut shell. And that you can remove. That's no different than any other nut. What the halacha is referring to is if you were to happen to come across, or you have a tree, or you live in Miami, and you have in the natural place in which it grows, which is in a hull, which is cracked open to get to the nut, you can't remove the whole nut with its shell from that outer hull. So the reason why you're like, I never got all confused, because you never see it. The reason why, again, remember the reason why this is prohibited is because it's not marketed that way. It's always removed out in the field, like the peas generally are, and it's not covered just until the time of eating, like a peel, like an orange peel or an apple peel or a cucumber peel. And therefore, that outer hull is the same thing as like a shell of a pod. But the shell of the almond is like any other shell, and that can be removed on Shabbos. That should clarify, I hope, from last week. The other two things that we left off with, one were edamames, they were called?
Edamame.
So none of you told me that edamames is spelled E-D. So I'm E-T-A-E-T. I'm searching all over the internet trying to find these edamames, and finally someone pointed it out to me that it's edamame. So if I got that, is for sure okay to do on Shabbos. If you look it up, it is clear that it is it's not edible. It grows that way, but it's removed right before eating. You're actually supposed to, as you mentioned, you cook it with it, and then you pop them out right before you eat them. So it's no different than any other shell that's kept on there right until the last moment, and then you eat it. They're not sold without their shell, which would make it similar to a pea pod. That's how they're produced. That's how they're.
Sometimes they are.
Well, all the sources I looked on made it clearly regular enough that they're generally it's normal and it's common enough that it's sold that way. They're supposed to be cooked that way, and then you just pop them out right. That seemed to me clear that it would be similar to all the other things that would be okay from the way that I understood all the various sites which discuss. I'm now very familiar with lots of interesting ways to make edamames, whatever they're pronounced, whatever they are, but. Okay, and lastly, one final thing from last week was mashing bananas. So last week we discussed the prohibition of tochein. Tochein is grinding. The general prohibition of grinding is taking a food and chopping it up into lots of small different pieces, which is prohibited. Mashing is different because when you mash a banana, if you mash, there are two ways of mashing. If you have a new sheet, I added this in under page 2. Right before letter D, kosev, I added mashing. So if you mash a potato, so potatoes can be mashed in different ways, but generally, you can mash a potato in a way in which as you mash it, you end up with lots of smaller different pieces of potato. You started with one big piece of potato, and you end up with different discernible pieces of potato. That is for sure prohibited on Shabbos, because that's exactly like tochein. You grind, and so there's no difference between taking a knife and chopping up a cucumber into lots of small pieces, or taking a spoon and mashing a potato into lots of small pieces. You end up with the same thing in which you took a whole entity and broke it up into many smaller pieces, and that's for sure not allowed on Shabbos to mash up a potato like that. But a banana or an avocado, you don't end up with lots of small discernible pieces. You end up with one large, soft, mushy thing, entity in front of you. So that is a machlokas, a big dispute between Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal and the Chazon Ish, whether or not that is or is not considered tochen. Rav Moshe Feinstein was mekel, he was lenient, and he held that that has nothing to do with grinding. Grinding is taking an entity and grinding it up into lots of different pieces, as fine as a flour, or as fine as small little cucumber pieces. But taking an avocado or a banana and just making it smooth and mushy has nothing to do with mashing, and he was lenient on that. But in deference to the opinion of the Chazon Ish, Eretz Yisrael, who held that it was prohibited, we generally would therefore only be lenient to mash using a shinoi, using the back of a spoon or a fork like we discussed a little bit last week, so that you can do it, but only with a change in the way that it's normally done. Even though Rav Moshe would say it's fine anyway, there's no problem with it, you're not doing anything, he would be fine with it under all circumstances, but in deference to the opinion that it's a problem, you do it with the back of the spoon. Yeah.
Back to guacamole, are we saying now that it's okay to do guacamole?
So to mash it with a shinoi, right, to take it with the back of a spoon, you might have a and then what you mix it, how do you, then you have to add other things to it. It's not just pure avocado, right? So that'll be today's discussion of lush, of kneading. What do you add to it? Like cut vegetables?
Well, so like onion and tomato.
Is there any liquid or binder? But that doesn't bind it together. It would bind, that's just for taste.
It's so mush, no matter what you do. It's so mush.
Yeah, so then let's work through today's discussion and see if I
spice is much to consider.
I was just there's no binding agent, so you're just mixing them together. All right, let's work through today. Okay, that's going to be today's discussion. Yeah.
But for mashed potatoes, does it matter how you make mashed potatoes? Because you could make them very, very mushy and liquidy almost.
If they would have been cooked already, now can you take if you had a cooked.
Yes.
So that it would be kind of that if it didn't crumble into distinct pieces, a banana and an avocado will not fall into distinct pieces. So unless the avocado is really raw. But generally, the types that you mush, they become a big mush. A potato, I mean, if it will become that, then it would be the same thing. But I don't know that all potatoes are like that. Some, they just crumble more often than a banana or an avocado would. Okay, let's get into our next topic. Lisha, so it's on page 2, letter E. Lisha is kneading, is the way that it's defined. It generally is defined as follows. It was done in one of two ways in the original Mishkan, in the tabernacle that they built in the desert, the Jewish people is. They baked dough. That was one principal way in which the Lisha process would be done, which you take flour and a liquid binding agent. In the case of dough, of course, that is water. Water is added to the flour and you end up with dough. It was also done with dyes that they would use to color the different aspects of the tabernacle. They would take a powder that they would grind different naturally grown products into a powder, add water, and then that's how they'd make their dye. The prohibition is as follows. Binding together many small pieces of something solid. Flour is a solid food. It's not wet. It's a solid. By means of a bonding agent, which can be water, to form one mass. So the prohibition is taking two distinct entities and through one of them being a bonding agent creating a single entity. That is prohibited. It is a biblical prohibition on Shabbos to make a dough. Let's use it as our principal example. To make dough on Shabbos would be a biblical prohibition, which makes it pretty significant. Now, this applies both when the mixture is firm like dough or slightly fluid like a thick batter. So even if you can pour, let's say you're making a pancake batter, which is pourable, but making a pancake batter on Shabbos would have that same prohibition. You would, we'll talk about exactly what level of prohibition. It is prohibited to make a batter like pancake, taking a powder of whatever the mix would be, adding water to it, and creating that mixture, taking two entities, the water and the solid, and making it into the batter would be prohibited. Yeah?
Like there's salad dressing out there, there's ranch dressing.
Okay.
And milk or water, you couldn't do that.
We'll talk about it. There would be lots of different categories of how thick or thin the entity is and how it's possible to do so. So we will keep that all in mind. Let us get all through that. So just as some examples to get started, dry baby cereal with milk. Comes in a box. It's flaky. It's a solid. You add milk to it. You stir it up and you feed it to your baby. Not on Shabbos because you're creating a dough-like two separate entities are being bonded together. That is prohibited. Now, there are various ways in which this is going to be permitted. I want to say this from the beginning. Lisha, lush, creating a doughy batter, is going to be one of the types of prohibitions where there are numerous ways to be allowed to do it on Shabbos. But it needs to be understood that the activity as is prohibited unless we go through the appropriate mechanisms. But simply to make baby food out of the flakes that come in the box and adding water or milk is prohibited. The bigger one that's most relevant to most people that I've come across are egg salad or tuna salad. Making egg salad or tuna salad is the same thing. The tuna fish, when it comes out of the can, is pretty dry, so they're separate parts. You add mayo to it, you mix it up, and now you have a single entity called a tuna salad or egg salad, and that's prohibited to do on Shabbos. You can't make tuna salad or egg salad, but of course, again, we'll get to ways in which you can do it, but one can't do that. What's considered a mix? What about cereal and milk? I take my cereal, like cornflakes, out of my box on Shabbos morning, and I pour milk in. Why am I allowed to do that, or why am I allowed to do that? Aren't I creating a single entity as I do that? So the halacha is as follows, in letter E, B. This applies only to small bits that once combined will no longer be considered individually, but as one mass. Cereal, for example, it'll always be cereal and milk. Here are my flakes, here are my whatever type of cereal that I have, and it happens to be floating in milk. But I haven't created a new entity. Flour and water is dough. You can't re-separate your flour from your water. Once you have tuna salad, you cannot pick out your little chunks of tuna fish, even though you might be able to discern that that's a piece of tuna and that, but it just becomes one big mass. So the prohibition is creating from little pieces plus a bonding agent where it becomes one entity, that's prohibited. Cereal and milk will never fall into that. Well, I should say never. There's some types of cereals. When you cross over from cornflakes into oatmeal, there's like a gradation of like types of cereals until you get small enough until where it becomes that. Oatmeal will be a problem, but your general cereal and milk will not be. Yeah?
On one occasion, one of the children had cereal, but didn't finish it. So when we came back, it was all mushy and bonded together, so I turned around and I said,
okay, that's an interesting kind of case where in a normal amount of time to eat whatever it is, it doesn't happen, but if you leave things out long enough, then it will become that kind of thing. I didn't see anyone who mentioned that you could, assuming there's a normal amount, in other words, if certain types of cereals, every time you add the milk to the cereal, you're going to end up with a oatmeal type mixture by the time you're done. So that would be a problem to do it in the normal method. We'll get to the way that you can do it. But I think if it's just because you went away for 3 hours and you came back after shul, then that's already, you know, lots of foods. That I don't know is such a... I didn't see anyone who mentioned anything about that. Okay, so just some other examples of things that will be okay. So most cereals and milk, as I mentioned, will be okay. Potato salad with large chunks of potatoes would also be fine. Because as long as the potatoes, the pieces are big enough, then they're separate. They're distinct items that you can clearly see and separate at any time. I could pick out, this is a potato, and I could always pick out. You can't do that with dough. It's just, it becomes one. Tuna, you can't pick out pieces of tuna fish from tuna salad. It's just all one big thing. But the thing with potato salad, obviously, is you gotta be careful because there's a fine line between big pieces and when it becomes the types of potato salad that you've all seen where you can't pick out. It's like eating mayonnaise. There's like, where's the potato in here? So that would be a problem. But as long as they're big chunks, it's fine. But you should know, if they're big enough chunks, then it's fine to do that. On Shabbos, the other examples of people who want to make a vegetable salad mixed with oil, for example, is a good example. So I have my salad, I want to throw some oil on top and toss my salad. So technically speaking, I have my solid foods, and I have my bonding agent, my oil. But when you throw that together, it's still pieces of salad that are now just moist. You haven't created a new entity that wasn't there before. It was salad that was dry. Now it's salad that's a little bit wet. But it's not, it hasn't become like one new, indistinguishable entity. So those things would be fine to do. It's only when you're creating that new entity where they're bonded together. Okay. So far, so good? Now, there are three different categories of mixtures. So as we've started giving some examples, let's go through them now. Number one is a thick mixture. The thick mixture is the most significant and severe. That is the one that the Torah actually prohibits. The classic example of a thick mixture would be a dough, in which you have water, flour, and now it's dough. You can't pour it, you can't move it. It's just this thick immovable type of mixture. That is prohibited from the Torah, even if it flows, but if it's a very slow type of pour, when you try to pour it, that is biblically prohibited. Examples: challah dough, tuna salad, chopped liver, most or some baby cereals. Those just thick mixtures which are created, that is not allowed to be made on Shabbos. Second category, moving on to page number 3, is with... this is still explaining the thick doughs. There are two ways, which we've already done examples of both, to create a thick mixture. You can either create it with a liquid, like water. If you add water to flour, even though you started with a very liquidy bonding agent, but when it mixes with the flour, it's going to create a thick dough. Or you can use mayonnaise, which is a much more thick, coagulated substance that doesn't pour on its own, but it doesn't matter how you make your thick mixture, whether or not you're making tuna salad with tuna fish and mayonnaise, or you're making dough with flour and water, whatever the bonding agent, be it liquid, be it not liquid, be it a thick mayonnaise, either way it is the same prohibition. The reason why I mention this now is because it'll play a role in some of the ways that we are allowed to make things on Shabbos as we go along. But, yeah? You had a couple of, I don't know, it's just an example of what you couldn't do on Shabbos. So you couldn't, we could talk about making tuna salad if that is more relevant to your life. Yes, you can't bake dough on Shabbos. You can't make cookies or challah on Shabbos. I'm fine. It's fine. Truth is, we'll use a more practical example. We'll use tuna fish. The reason why dough is used is because that's what was done. They used to bake bread. So you weren't allowed to go through that process on Shabbos. You couldn't do anything that went on in the Beis HaMikdash. You couldn't do on Shabbos. So one of the things they did in building the Mishkan was dough, or making these dyes. But it'd be practically for us, you're right, nobody would be making dough because you can't bake anyway on Shabbos. But making tuna salad would be a much more practical example.
Now, if the egg is in big chunks, are you allowed to add mayonnaise to that?
If what's in big chunks?
The hard-boiled egg.
It depends what it will become when you mix it together. In other words, the same thing would be true like the potato salad. In other words, if you make egg salad in a way in which you could at any point pick out the egg, then that would be fine.
Okay.
Most egg salads that I've seen, you couldn't do that. It just becomes one big lump of egg salad. The second type of mixture is what we call a loose mixture. Now, a loose mixture is not biblically prohibited, but it was rabbinically prohibited, which will make it much more lenient as we go along in general. And that's a batter or a puree, which becomes one mass, but it flows when poured. If you wanted to make an applesauce, ketchup, loose baby syrup, those types of foods, if you wanted to make something like that, which is a pourable type thing, which was produced by creating it, by adding two things together, that would be rabbinically prohibited to make on Shabbos. And lastly...
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So... You have to make your salad dressing ahead of time, in other words.
Well, we're going to get to the way that you... In a normal method, yes. In other words, if your salad dressing is a good example of a... most salad dressings are probably... would be a loose mixture, which they're easily poured. So to make that, however you make it, make it out of mayonnaise and oil and stuff,
whatever,
would be a classic example in which you're taking two distinct entities, assuming that one was a liquid and one was a solid. If they're both liquids, then... this would not apply. So most salad dressings, mayonnaise is generally considered on the liquid side. Mayonnaise is a bonding agent to a solid. Spices. Oh, yes, they're dry. If you have dry, flaky salad, yes, that would be a problem. Right. So if you have sugar. Okay, so probably, I would assume most of the time you would have a problem with making it on Shabbos in the normal method, yeah. Yeah, that's a good example. And that would turn into the rabbinically prohibited type of mixture because it's going to be a pourable type of thing, so it's not going to be a thick batter like dough, which is biblically prohibited, but it would be rabbinically prohibited. Now, what is permitted, and some salad dressings might be like this as well, are what we call watery mixtures, which it does not even qualify as like a battery type substance, or probably like an Italian dressing would be the closest that I would think about that, where it's not even, it depends on how thick it is. But the ones which are clearly fine, chocolate milk, baby formula, instant coffee, all of those things, like, why are you allowed to make that? Aren't you taking a powder, be it in the form of coffee or baby formula, adding water, you shake it up, and now you have an inseparable entity. It's one thing. It's your classic example of kneading. Except for the fact that it's so watery, it really is just now a thick water. It doesn't even qualify as a pourable batter. It's just water. It's now colored water, chocolate milk or baby formula colored milk. But that stuff is entirely permitted without any concern whatsoever. You can do that however you want to do it. It's not a problem on Shabbos. So I guess the salad dressings would depend on if it was at least thick enough where it would have the status of a loose mixture, then it would be rabbinically prohibited. If it's so watery that it's basically made out of water with a couple of things thrown in, or oil, then maybe it would even be entirely permitted. I don't know, I'm not an expert enough in the different types of formulas where we would draw that line. Yeah?
With the coffee, you have to put the hot water in first and the salad.
Okay, that would be a visual issue. In other words, as far as I'm talking about, the concept of making the mixture would be fine. Whether or not you're considered cooking the coffee beans, We're not going to get the visual today, so I can't answer that question. I didn't know. But that will be an issue. We have to address the cooking aspect. Yeah.
But in the case of not cooking, you wouldn't have to use a third cup. It would be perfectly all right to make that liquid mixture.
No, the third cup is going to be an issue of cooking.
Yeah.
If it's not a cooking issue, if you're making chocolate milk with cold milk and powder, then there's no issue whatsoever. It's totally fine. The only issue would be if you pour the milk really slowly and wanted to create a paste first. I don't know why, that would be the only issue which you couldn't do, because then you're creating a thick batter, or at least a loose mixture. But if you just pour it all in at the same time, then there's no problem whatsoever with doing that on Shabbos. Okay, those are the problems. Now, the lush... I'm going to skip a step just to introduce this right now. We'll go in order. Sorry. D, two stages of the kneading process. So whenever you knead, there are two stages. I know this because I looked it up, not because I've ever done this before. Number one is you have your flour and you pour the two things together. You pour your bonding agent on top of your flour, pour your water onto your flour, your oil, your mayo, whatever it is, and then you have to stir it. So the halacha recognizes both of those stages as problematic. Since the Torah prohibits lush, the Torah prohibits kneading, so both of those stages are part of the prohibited activity, and either one, even without the other, would be a problem. And therefore, in the way that we're going to find a way to make it permitted, we're going to deal with both of these two stages. So step number one, simply pouring the liquid onto a solid will often cause some immediate bonding. When you pour flour, water onto flour, right away some of it's going to form into dough even before you really begin the kneading process. So that's prohibited. You can't even pour the water on, because right away that's going to begin. Now that would not apply to mayo onto tuna fish, because when you plop a big scoop of mayo on top of tuna, nothing happens. Until you start mixing that together, you could just scoop it right off, and nothing would be the difference. So that's not prohibited just to put it there, as opposed to putting water on top of flour would be. Then the second stage is going to be prohibited according to everything. When you start to stir, that's going to be a problem. This results in a certain stringency in level E. The halacha recognizes what's translated into English as highly absorbent mixes, which basically means there are certain types of things where you don't even have to stir at all. You simply pour in, and on its own, it will create a mix. In instant potatoes, oatmeal is brought as an example of this. If you simply pour in a liquid into these types of very thin, flaky mixtures, you don't even really have to stir, even though we might. But if you would just pour it in and let it sit there, it would totally become whatever you need it to. That is always prohibited on Shabbos, and there's no way, we're about to go through the exceptions and how we can make it permitted. Those things are always out. If you have one of those types of foods, instant potatoes, or those really easy instant oatmeal, those are not going to be allowed to be made on Shabbos. Even if we get around the bishul issues, we get around cooking, simply the creating it is going to create the problem. Yeah.
Is this concept only applying to food? For example, like, girls will take baby powder and put it on their hair.
Mm-hmm.
To absorb oil on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, 3-day Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
Are you allowed to do that? Because as soon as you put baby powder on oil, it absorbs.
Yeah, but does it then what do you do with it? It creates a dough on your
your
hair?
It's basically absorbing the oil, so you brush it through and it bonds the oil, so it's not oily.
I don't know. What do you comb out of your hair?
You take
like thick
powder.
Clumps of.
Like you sprinkle out very lightly. You're not like making, but essentially what you're doing is creating an absorbing thing to create
to pick up
paste that's going to pick up the oil in your hair.
But it doesn't form.
Does it form anything?
It can. I mean, like you put enough in, it will. I mean, most people don't, but like it does. It is a highly absorbing substance, baby powder, and if you're shaking it on something that has moisture or oil, it will absorb immediately.
So I just don't know. You're asking an interesting question, whether or not if the individual, you're not going to be left with anything. Yeah, I don't. Let me look into that. It's an interesting question.
I mean, I don't know if this just applies to food.
Right, that'd be the two. No, there's A. I did not see. I didn't see it addressed anywhere else, but I don't remember seeing anyone specifically saying not that way. I'm a feeling it's going to be. Let me look into it. It's a good question. I don't know. Okay. Okay. Now. And Losh is going to be one of a few examples. I think we had one, Tochen was one from last week. We had also, generally when you do things with a shinui, when you do things in a different than the normal, than the regular method, that only makes it prohibited rabbinically, not biblically. With the examples we mentioned yesterday, last week, or 2 weeks ago it actually was, you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. So no one says that if you turn the stove on with your elbow, and you use your elbows to put your pot up on the fire, that you're allowed to cook because I use the shinui. It's still rabbinically prohibited, even though you're using a shinui, and that's true by almost all of the laws of Shabbos. You're not allowed to flick on lights with your elbow just because it's in a shinui. We only use a shinui when there's a great need anyway. Somebody is sick, someone has to go to the hospital, so then we at least want to do things in a way that are only rabbinically prohibited as opposed to biblically prohibited. Once I needed to violate Shabbos anyway, at least only do it rabbinically. But it doesn't make it okay to do. There were two exceptions to that. One we discussed last week was tochein grinding. There, the halacha recognized that when you grind something with a shinui, it actually makes it entirely permitted because it's so outside the realm of what's normally done. And the other one is this topic of lush. When you need something, if you combine two separate entities into one with a shinui, that's considered so abnormal that it actually becomes permitted. Not just bumped down to a rabbinic prohibition, but it actually becomes permitted. So all the things that we've been saying that you can't do on Shabbos, really, you can, as long as you're aware of the fact that really you're not allowed to, and you're going to do it differently than you normally do. With the one exception that we just mentioned of the highly absorbent foods, your instant oatmeal, instant mashed potatoes, which are just so absorbent, you don't have to do anything. As soon as you pour the liquid in, it becomes what it becomes. That's always prohibited. But the other things, our tuna salad, our egg salad, our salad dressings, all of those things will be okay, provided we use a shinui in how we do that. Now, the way that the shinui is done is attacking the two ways that the prohibition addresses. One, putting the two foods together, and two, stirring them together. Just like both of those activities are prohibited, you can't do either one of them on their own. You can't even pour the water onto the flour. You can't mix them together. So both of the ways of creating the dough have to be done in an unusual manner, and then it will be okay to do on Shabbos. So letter F, two, you have to change the order of combining, which is stage one. Now this is only necessary for liquid mixtures when bonding starts immediately, but it's not necessary for mayonnaise as nothing happens anyway. So just, right, practically speaking, let's say you want to make mayonnaise on Shabbos, you want to make tuna salad on Shabbos, so you put your tuna and then you put your mayo on top. So the putting the tuna on top doesn't need to be done with the shinui because that nothing happened there anyway. It's only if you wanted to make a batter. Let's say you wanted to make a salad dressing, that would have a problem. So there, as soon as you pour the oil on top, it begins to mix. Then both stages would have to be done with a shinui, as we'll see. Yeah?
What is the shinui?
Shinui means a change in the normal manner. In other words, just like if I want to grind with a knife, I have to use the back of a fork. I have to do something that's different. So with the shinui here would be in the way in which you, I forgot to actually write it down. So what would a shinui be in the, so you change the order in which you combine. How do you normally make dough? So you normally make dough, you put all the flour in a bowl, and then you pour the water. So you'd have to have done it in the opposite way, in which first what goes into the bowl would be your water, and then you would do your dough, your flour. That's if you were making dough. But again, with tuna salad, which is tuna and mayo, there it doesn't make a difference because the mayo, that stage doesn't really do anything anyway. Am I getting confusing? Yes? No?
Like the bottom line, if you did everything before Shabbos, it's fine?
Yeah, but then you could eat it, yeah. Okay, we're going to get to the examples in a second, and then if I've lost you until this point, just focus on the examples. The other change is in the method of stirring or in the kneading, which is the second thing. You can't stir in the norm. Normally you stir, you take your spoon and you go into these big circular motions and you stir it up. So you have to do that differently. So the way you do it differently is either, number one, doing a crisscross, which means going in a diagonal, picking up your utensil and going the other way, picking it up. So it's a very slow and tedious process, which nobody does it that way. That's such an odd way and tedious way of doing it. That's considered a shinu. It's considered beyond the norm. Then you'd be allowed to do it. So if you wanted to make tuna fish because you forgot to make your tuna salad before Shabbos, so you take out your tuna, top your mayonnaise on top, and then you go through this arduous process of stirring it, and you'd be allowed to do that on Shabbos. If you were not do that on Shabbos and you just stir normally, that is a biblical prohibition. So this is like tuna salad is a thick mixture. So making tuna salad on Shabbos is serious. But as long as you do it in an abnormal way, then it becomes permitted. The other way to do it is barehanded, because normally you don't make tuna salad. I guess caterers probably do, but in one's home, if you normally do, then you couldn't use it on Shabbos. The other way would be using the handle of a spoon or a fork or a knife, which is generally, that's like a weak type of shinoi because it's, you know, even though you're holding it differently, but it doesn't really do a different job, holding the back of the spoon from the front of the job, since it's really all the same. So it's not really, that's not a great shinoi, so not really recommended unless you're doing a loose mixture, which is only rabbinically forbidden in the first place. So it's better to use, if you're making tuna salad, which is a thick mixture, better to do the crisscross method. That's the preferred method of stirring up on Shabbos. Okay, let's just go through the examples just to put this together and move on to Borer. So tuna and egg salad. So Lamaisa, what happens? How do you make tuna or egg salad on Shabbos? What do you need to do? So you can mix them together in the normal methods because both egg salad and tuna salad is generally made with mayonnaise. Mayonnaise is the type of food that when you put the mayo on top, nothing happens right away. So it's fine. You put your tuna in the bowl, you put your egg salad in the bowl, dump your mayonnaise on top, and then the best thing to do is crisscross. One, pick it up, go the other way, pick it up, back and forth until you get it all mixed up. Using the back of a fork as your shinoi, meaning stirring in the normal method, just using the back of a fork is really not recommended because since what you're creating is a biblical type of mixture, that's a very weak shinoi to use the back of the fork, so it's much better to use the crisscross method. Now that you have your tuna fish, you want to add in your cut vegetables, which you cut before Shabbos because you don't want to cut into small pieces on Shabbos. So you had them cut from before Shabbos, and now you want to add them into your tuna salad. Are you allowed to do that? So the answer is yeah. You add them in normally because nothing happens. When you add little bits of vegetable to a tuna salad, nothing naturally happens on its own, only when you stir it in. So you can't stir it in because you're now just further creating a new mixture, even though the tuna salad already is a mixture, but now you're making this, you're adding this new mixture of the vegetables, so then you just have to stir that with that same shinoi, and then you're allowed to do that. So you can actually create a full vegetable bit tuna salad on Shabbos as long as you're mixing and stirring in a shinoi way. Yeah.
And even if you've been crisscrossed, you can't get to the point where you're going to make it so well mixed, because we won't be able to stir the tuna fish, and you're going to go back to the original problem.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, in other words, you're allowed to create a mixture as long as you're doing it in a way that's a shinoi.
Okay.
It's going to take longer and it's harder, so I would recommend doing it before Shabbos, but you can do it on Shabbos if you have to, as long as you're using the shinoi.
But you'll still be able to pick out those vegetables, right? They're not really going to become a part of the mixture.
So there might be so I guess it depends on how big they are.
What kind of vegetables? Usually, it's not like mushy vegetables that you're.
Yeah, if you go to a store, a caterer, and you get a tuna salad, it's all they're cut pretty small. It's all just a big mix. You couldn't really pick out a piece of cucumber, celery from those. I mean, you could see it, but it's really just become one. If you want it at home, you want to make it bigger, then yeah.
So that makes it okay. Then
if they're big enough, if they're separate, but generally tuna salad doesn't have those big enough. They're generally pretty. They become like one on. One big, I think. Okay, loose baby formula would be the same thing. Not baby formula, this would be the baby cereal. So here you have to do a shinoi in how you make it. You can't, normally you'd put the dry cereal in the bowl and then you add your milk or water. So here you'd have to do a shinoi, you'd have to first put in your milk or water, then you add your dry cereal, and then you have to stir also in a different type of manner. The thick baby cereal, generally, so we would use it for, you know, for a child who really needs it. So the same thing with the stirring of with the shinoi. And one last leniency as far as this goes is mixing horseradish with ketchup or mayo, as people like to do, is okay. The horseradish is already a mixture itself, meaning when you make horseradish, it's not just pure grated horseradish already been mixed up with all sorts of things. And when you add, you're actually loosening the mixture. When you add your mayo, horseradish is usually pretty thick. When you add mayo or ketchup, for people who like to do that to their horseradish, you're actually creating a, it, what it was once a thicker mixture, they're just, you're downgrading it into an even, loosening it even further, and the post can say that that is entirely fine to do that. Okay, I'm not sure how relevant the law is. Some people do make tuna salad, like to make their egg salad on Shabbos. If you do, make sure you use it with the shinoi. It comes up with the baby formula. But it's important to know, again, what is okay are all your like chocolate milk type drinks and your baby formula type things. Those things are fine. Your instant coffee, once we get past the visual issue, those things are okay. And the instant oatmeal or mashed potatoes, those things are always a problem just because of the way that they bond right away. Yeah. So you tell me how to mix up. What are the ingredients of salad dressing?
Oil, vinegar, sometimes sugar,
right.
Spices.
So assuming there's enough sugar or other stuff where it becomes like a runny batter, not like, I guess Italian seems to me to be pretty loose, but I don't know where we draw the line between like chocolate milk and, a thin batter.
When you add enough sugar to it sometimes, it becomes like syrupy.
Right, so that would be the same thing in which you'd have to do whatever your normal method would be of how you make it. I don't know what ingredients you put in first. You'd have to do the opposite, which I assume would sound like you'd be putting the oil in first. You would not normally do that, right?
No.
Right, so you'd put your oil in first, add in all your other stuff, and then you'd have to mix it also with that shinoi. And then you'd be allowed to do that on Shabbos. Unless it's a very thin type of, watery type of oil salad, then you could do it normally. But
Is there any question of making a thin salad dressing and shaking it like chocolate milk?
If it's thin enough, no, that wouldn't be right. That'd be fine.
I have a question about the shinoi. You said I wrote down, and I think I got it backwards. I wrote down only possible if rabbinically not accepted, but not biblical, but it's really the other way around.
No, both. It works for both. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What if you don't make a sound that you just pour stuff?
All right, so that's totally fine. That's what we mentioned before, that considered a mixture. In other words, if the two entities, when they're combined, don't change it into a new single entity, then it's like cereal and milk. There's no problem with pouring milk over cornflakes because it's just milk and cornflakes, but it's not a new single unit. So if you just wanted to pour oil on top of your salad, then it's totally fine. It's only making the salad dressing, which I now have a new entity. I used to have vinegar and oil and sugar and whatever else, mayonnaise, whatever's in there. So assuming that you never end up with anything other, in other words, by doing that, I'm assuming that sounds like it would be fine because you never created anything. In other words, even at the end of the day, after all of your ingredients are over your salad, you still basically have a wet salad. You have clear, distinct pieces of lettuce and tomato and whatever else is in there. You didn't create a dough. If you would have made the dressing itself, now I would have created something new. You didn't make a dressing. You just added it to the salad. That, to me, sounds like that should be fine.
Let's say if you make a dressing before Shabbos and the ingredients coagulate in the refrigerator, like the sugar and the soy, whatever. It's more like when you stir it, it makes like a...
Right.
It's thicker. And then you're supposed to pour it over the salad. Is that a problem?
That
you
is a great question. Like when you shake it up, like shake it up with your left hand behind your back.
I leave it in a container because I didn't want
right.
to measure. My
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to measure the thing on Shabbos.
Right, I mean, separate dish, right. And now you have them all, so now it comes out of the fridge, it's now all together, and you're supposed to shake it up and serve.
You put it on like an hour before serving. You're not supposed to let it sit and drench it. Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that that's any different than when you put mayo on top of a tuna. So right now I have two things, and it's when I stir it, I create something new. So the fact that this was once together, but the bottom line is as you take it out of your fridge, you have very distinct layered. Right, and so shaking it up is creating it as one again.
Okay.
So I don't, it sounds like it should be the same as mayo on top of tuna, where the problem is in the stirring. Mm-hmm. And then you might have to then... What's that?
You have like a salad dressing that separates
out? I'm talking about like oil and soy. Yeah, like
any kind of thicker.
Like, yeah, you know, the sugar separates,
right,
the oil separates. You can see it.
Yeah, of course, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes, I'm saying I never thought of that before. That in shaking it is the normal method of creating the new single entity.
Stir it, like you'd actually have to stir it up.
Right, something. Right. No, it's like generally, like you never would stir that. You would always shake it, right?
Or you could take a fork and just, you know.
See, now that you can, but you wouldn't. The normal way to do it would be to shake it.
I normally
stir it.
Normally,
I
have
to
stir it, so sometimes it's very syrupy.
So it would sound to me, and I will double check on this one, that you'd have to do something different than what normally is done.
It'd
have to be
stir it like that.
Yeah, or whatever would normally be done. It would have to be totally different than what you normally do.
Like, I know, like, I'm made salads that separate, and I always just either take them out of the fridge when I'm taking out my food to, like, get room temperature, and then once it gets room temperature, I'll just shake it.
Because once it's room temperature, it mixes on its own.
It mixes on its own, but it's not coagulated, so by shaking it, it does go back together.
Okay, I didn't see anybody talk about that example, but that sounds like a very relevant, practical example. Like, every week, stuff comes out of the fridge, and you shake it up. And I don't know why it should be okay. It shouldn't need something, because you're taking things which are clearly layered and distinct and making it one. That's a good question.
You can't dig one out from the other.
Right. So that's the only question. Unless the fact that it was once together... Yeah, but you can layer at a time. You could take off the top layer and then you could separate. You should be able to separate them. Yeah.
Mayonnaise
is a liquid as far as this goes, as far as being a bonding agent.
Mm-hmm. Or sugar to it, you're not really changing the consistency, correct?
Well, the sugar, the spice would be considered like the flour.
Like a solid.
Right. In the same way as flour.
It's basically you just mix it in with the chinoy and...
Just mixing. Putting them together, you don't need the chinoy because
right.
Mayo is thick and nothing happens anyway, but
right.
Then the way that you would mix them together would require a chinoy. That's right, yeah.
And that's also what you would use them to thin the
mayonnaise. Like what, water?
Like you use lemon juice.
So I don't know that I think that's like
because if you're considering a liquid, then
right, then that's right, there's two liquids. Yeah.
But it's really not a liquid.
Right, I'm saying a coagulated substance like mayo, as far as lush kneading goes, has the status of a liquid. But then it should follow that adding a liquid to that would not be considered kneading. You need to have a solid that's being bonded by a bonding agent, not two liquids. Like, there's no problem adding two liquids together. I don't think that's a problem. I left my pen in my office. Just, I want to just keep track of the questions we're raising here. I can get back to you. What do we have? We had the shaking the oil and adding an oil to mayo. There's one other that we had. The baby powder, right?
If you take it out, and it's on the counter, and it's coming to room temperature, but it's near your water thing,
yeah,
which will make it come to room temperature faster,
mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to that when we talk about visual in terms of putting things on or near a blech,
mm-hmm.
But in a place where it can't actually cook, it's too far away, that's going to be fine. And you can't cook by being near a water urn. So the little heat that you get out of that will be fine. Okay, let's go into Borer. We have a few minutes left. Let's get started at least on Borer. Borer is very, very relevant. Outside of Bishul, which we're going to get to, have to create another week. I'll take a look in your Shabbos flyer, and we'll get another week on tap for Bishul. But Borer is probably, if not the most, you find even more than Bishul, relevant on Shabbos. Borer literally is sorting or choosing one variety from another. Now, there's three principal ways in which it will come up all the time. Number one, it includes sorting from a mixture into its individual components. I mean, we just got finished talking about lush, which was taking individual things and putting them together. Borer is in a way almost the opposite, in which I have a mixture of things and I sort them into their component parts. So even if I'm not separate, the most common way that we think about borer is taking what I want from a mixture. But it just as much applies, in which I'm simply sorting the mixture in front of me into two separate things. Anyone with a playroom filled with toys and games at the end of a Shabbos lunch will have this problem regularly, in which there are things all mixed together and you want to sort them out into their different things. If you have a mixture, so you're now going to take from a mixture and sort out into it. You have this with silverware at the end of a meal, if you want to start doing things. That is all within Borer, as well as the common example of selecting an item from the mixture. Which I have a mixture in front of me and I want something from that, or I don't want something from that. That's the classic example also of Borer, in which I remove the entity or the item, or even that I do want or that I don't want. Now, Borer is going to be one of those examples which we'll get to, which you're all probably a little bit familiar with. There are ways around the problem. There are times when you can select. But the starting point, which is important to remember and recognize, is you can't do it even if you're taking the thing that you want. You can't, even if it's just because it's the thing that you want. The concept of Borer is selecting something out of a mixture. Taking something that was together with something and pulling it out, or sorting the mixture into its component parts. All of those things are prohibited because of Borer, and this includes even randomly taking items and placing them separately where they belong. I have this huge pile of silverware, so I say, I know I can't sort. So what I'll do is I'll just close my eyes and I'll pick out whatever I get. I say, knife, oh, that goes over here. And a fork, that goes over here. So I'm not like sorting, I'm not separating, and I'm not selecting, but you can't even pull out and then start placing in the right places, even though you're just randomly pulling from where you're going, which was news to me, because I had thought, and I mentioned this because, in case you shared the same misconception that I had, that if you're given a pile of silverware from a spouse to set the table on Shabbos, like, now I have this big pile, that it was okay to just sort of pull them out randomly and set the table wherever it may go. But you cannot do that, because even though you're just pulling out randomly and then you're deciding wherever it needs to go, you're going to go, put it, is also not okay under the prohibition of Borer. So any way of sorting, separating, selecting is going to fit under this prohibition. Now, different types of mixtures. We have what's called objective and subjective. Objective mixtures are in which we have a food and a waste or unusable product. Meaning you have nuts mixed up with shells. The shells are inherently, they're just garbage. They're just going to be thrown out. There's nothing you can do with them. And you have what's called subjective mixtures, in which their mixture is created out of two very usable products, but you don't want one of the aspects of the mixture. So it's not that it's bad or garbage or waste. It's just, I don't want it. I have nuts and raisins, and I don't like raisins. I only like nuts. So that's also a mixture. Now, there are going to be differences based on the type of mixture that we have, whether or not it's really a waste-type product mixed together with food, or there are two foods and I happen to not want one, but those are both going to be considered a type of mixture, and we're going to have a problem of sorting or choosing from such a mixture. Flipping out to page 4. Now, this also applies equally to liquids and solids, meaning it's not going to matter whether or not the classic examples we're going to talk about are solids, choosing two solids out of a mixture, or you're straining a liquid to remove a sediment or an herb or dirt or insects or fat or extra water from a cholent. In all of those instances, it doesn't make a difference, solid, liquid. If you are pulling something out of something else, sorting something from something else, all of those will fall under the prohibition of Borer, and it applies as much to non-food items. Here we do have that qualification where it doesn't matter if it's food or not food. It's the same problem, which is going to deal with our cutlery issue, it's going to deal with towels, game pieces, all of those things are going to fall under the prohibition of Borer and sorting if you're pulling out things that you specifically want from a mixture, which you took what was once a mixture and pulled something out of it. Yeah? Well, hold on, I'm going to get to all the... this is just beginning the introduction. Okay, C. Now this is... there are a couple of key variables that need to be determined whenever you talk about Borer. Number one, Borer, again, has to be where there's a mixture in front of me, and I am pulling out of that mixture. Well, the first question that we're going to have to define is, what's considered a mixture? When is it considered that I have different items that are now together, that it's considered mixed up together, that if I pull something out of it, is considered a problem? I have a big bowl of grapes. all red grapes, and I see one that I like. It looks particularly firm, and I really want that grape. So I select it. I have a big bowl, and I selected that grape. Is that considered boder? Have I selected something from a mixture? There are a lot of, so how different do the qualities of grape have to be? And from when it turns into a bowl of grapes, and I happen to like that one, until it turns into, no, that's considered now selecting, where there are two different things in front of me that are mixed up. So how do we define it? So number one, different species. If they're considered to be a different species, then it's considered different. How do we define that? What does it mean they're not different things in front of me? So there are various ways in which we can define the entities as being distinct enough from each other so that if they're mixed together, they're considered a mixture. The first one is just obvious. I just threw it in there, even though it doesn't need to be said. Fruits, nuts, mixed vegetables, things which are clearly very different, that's considered a mixture. But that doesn't need to be said. That's obvious. Different tastes. If the entities have a clearly distinguishable taste, where you can, I'm just making this up as an example, you would order a difference between boiled or roasted chicken, cooked or raw apples. If you were fed it, you would know right away, well, yeah, they're both apples, but they're very different. They taste different based on the way that they're made. So if there's a discernible taste difference, so then they're considered different types of foods, or if they have a different function. Now, different function is very important because it will include a lot of different things. If you have soup spoons and teaspoons, even though they're all spoons, but those are considered different entities. If they got mixed up together and you needed to set the table and someone said, no, not those spoons, I said the teaspoons. So if you have a mixture of soup spoons and teaspoons, because they have different functions, you don't use a teaspoon for your soup and you don't use a soup spoon for whatever you use a teaspoon for. So when they get mixed up together, because they have a different name, which is defined by the fact that they have a different function, that would be considered a mixture. If you have large and small plates, you have these little saucers, you have a coffee plate, saucers, and your regular dinner plates, your dessert plates, if they have a different function, it's considered a mixture. And therefore, if you have after Shabbos lunch, you have a big pile of plates, and you can discern the different plates. Those are my dinner plates, and those are my dessert plates, and they have different functions. Those are dessert plates, these are dinner plates. That's considered a mixture, and you would not be able to, from that mixture, pull out things, separate and sort, and put into different piles to clean up after Shabbos, creating piles of dinner plates separate from the... this happens every Shabbos when you put out appetizer plates. So whatever they're called. They're not called appetizer plates. Salad plates, right? So you have a little salad plate which you put whatever's on there, and then by the time you finish with lunch in your kitchen, you have this big pile of plates. That's considered a mixture, even though they're all plates, but because they're distinguishable by their function, these are what we use for our appetizer, these are what we use for our main course, if you were to have a pile, you would not be allowed to sort those into neat piles and say, here, I'll have a nice pile of dinner plates and a nice pile of my appetizer plates. Sorting from that big mess into those piles would be a problem. Now, an exception to this are when things are just different sizes in terms of like foods, say big pieces of melt and a little pieces of metal, different sizes are not considered something different. You have a big bowl of melon and you happen to like eating small pieces of melon because it's more convenient for you. So if you select out smaller pieces of melon or you want to serve a child, you don't want another big piece. So that's not a problem. You have to worry about that because that's not considered a mixture when you have a big bowl and you're looking for the little pieces or the little grapes out of a thing. There's no difference in function. They're the same thing. So since there's no difference in function, they're not called anything different. They don't have different tastes. They're just cut differently. That's not a problem, and that's not considered a mixture. There's no issue of boder if you're going to start selecting from a bowl of melon. Okay, that's one way in which we would define a mixture, in which we have entities that have a different function in front of us, and they got all mixed together.
So your grape would be okay.
Say that again.
Your grape that you wanted.
Hold on, that's our next thing. Different quality. Now, if foods are of different quality, that would also determine them to be distinguishable enough that if they then got mixed in together, that would be considered a ta'arovas, a mixture, and you could not separate from that. Now, what defines different quality? There are huge gradations in different quality. So the halacha recognizes it as follows. Only when one of the entities in front of you would not regularly be used, unless it was the case of great necessity. So you have a tin of potatoes. For the potatoes, and you got caught up with something on Erev Shabbos, and some of them burnt. So how bad is it? So now this big tin, and you're pulling out Erev Shabbos, so if, let's assume it wasn't Shabbos now, and you're now going to take from your tin of potatoes into your nice serving bowl. If it's so bad that the ones that got burnt are so badly burnt, you would not use them. Unless you were really desperate, because you really needed them, or somebody really liked, but they generally, they're bad enough that they would be left out because they're that poor quality. That would distinguish it in quality, as opposed to most of the time the food is cooked or burnt to an extent where you put it in there. It's like, okay, it's a little bit more cooked than I would have wanted to have been, but it's not where I separate it out. It's just a little bit. That's not considered a problem, a mixture. If you would put it out there, you'd serve it, you'd use it regularly, and the people who like burnt potatoes will take the burnt ones, and the people don't. So if I now have this in front of me, if the bowl gets put in front of me, and the balabasta of the house did not feel it was a problem to put those burnt potatoes in there, then I happen to not like it, it's not a problem for me to select either the ones that I want or don't want. There's just no bowl issue if for me to take from that bowl whatever I want, because it's not a mixture. The fact that some were a little bit more burnt than others doesn't define a problem. They're not considered two separate entities in front of me. But let's say you have a pile of grapes. If it wouldn't be Shabbos, if you'd pull out all the... No one would eat these grapes. These grapes are almost inedible. They're so shriveled or spoiled or rotten. Then that becomes this separate. And then from that pile, I now have a boder issue. If in my cluster of grapes, there are grapes which would normally not be eaten, then that's considered a mixture. And I do then have to deal with the laws of boder when I want to deal with taking grapes from that mixture. Make sense? Now this is all just in defining where we have a problem of boder. Because in order to have a problem of boder, we have to have a mixture. Let's go for a little bit longer. You have to have a mixture, and defining a mixture is where you have two separate foods mixed together. So again, just to quickly review, what will define two separate foods if they're clearly different? Fruit, nuts, mixed vegetables, potatoes, meat. Those things are clearly, in a cholent, you know, will clearly create a mixture. Or if we have different tastes, will create a mixture. Or different functions will create a mixture. Or the quality is so different that one would generally not be used. Whether or not the food is so spoiled that it wouldn't normally be used, or that the is so burnt that it wouldn't be used. So to my original example, so if I see in the bowl of grapes a particularly good grape that I want, I don't have to worry about boder whatsoever, because they're all grapes, they're all edible, and the fact that I want this one more than that one, or that one looks more attractive than that one, doesn't create a mixture, and therefore selecting from it is not considered selecting. Yeah?
So if you have a basket of lounges,
mm-hmm.
Is there a difference between the Ashkenaz and Sephardic as far as like not going but taking an item?
Pick. I mean, you want to wear, you have clean clothing and you want to wear something. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Yeah, sorry.
There's no question of a mixture when you're talking about salmon grapes.
Yeah, it would be the same thing. In other words, we're going to have to talk about how to, you know, what happens when you have a stem on a grape in terms of pulling it apart. We'll hold on to that. We'll get to that.
They're not two different foods. The stem is...
Well, they are very different. In other words,
they're different, but one is not edible, and the other is...
Yeah, that's fine. They could be they both can be non-edible. Silverware is also the same problem. Neither one of them is edible. Okay, the other variable that needs to be addressed is, when is it considered mixed? When you walk into, let's say a child is trying to get dressed, he doesn't have an in-a-nice laundry basket, he just has his clothes all over the floor, and he's looking for his shoe in a messy room. So there's stuff all over. What makes the room? When is it considered a mixture? You know, there's shoes over there, and there's clothing over there. So it's a big mess. How close together do things have to be where we start seeing them as now a mixture? Where when I separate it out, is considered to be a problem. So this is one. There's no real clear just definition in the sense of, you know, 3 inches is considered. It's almost based on every single example is based on its own example, when it becomes a mixture, in terms of how close together things are when they become, when it's considered. So the poskim are stringent with this because since the definition is not really clear and it's a biblical prohibition, when you have a problem, you select something out from it. This is talking on a biblical level of a prohibition of borer. So we generally are stringent in considering things to be a mixture. And the way the poskim write it is when items are perceived as part of a group and not yet individually. In other words, very often you'll see things in front of you when, like a playroom example is a great example where there's just like stuff all over, where there are toys and games. So sometimes it's perceived to be a group and sometimes they're different pieces. There's Lego and there's a game. They're in the same general area, but no one would view it or see it as a mixture. They happen to be next to each other, or clothing in a laundry basket. It's very difficult to define. I don't have a great... We'll speak through examples. And number two there, like cholent ingredients, you throw them together in a cholent. So even though it's recognizable, I can see this is a bean, that's a potato, this is a piece of meat, but it's a mixture. It's one entity. It's now a cholent. So even though you can see the distinct pieces, but it becomes a mixture because they're all mixed into one. Any fruit salad becomes a mixture, even though, again, it's very recognizable. There's the pieces of pineapple and strawberry and grape. But it's a mixture, even though you could see them, but it's clearly become a mixture. It's now dealt with as a single entity.
So you're talking about like when the item is naturally mixed, like a fruit salad is naturally mixed. Like what about like a layered salad where everything is on separate layers and you only want the cucumbers? Can you take just the cucumbers? Because it's separated by layers.
Are they on top?
They're on top of each other. Like
you want the thing which is on top, but you want to remove the level on top to get to the ones on the bottom. Okay, so we'll get I think that'll fill in. We're going to get to things that are stacked. Yeah, we'll get to that. Borer is a lot, and let me. Yeah. Yes, you're allowed to set a table on Shabbos.
You can.
We'll have to talk about how.
Hmm?
We'll talk about how in a second. Let me... you tell me. It's already like 9:05. There's still much more to do in Boder. We'll get to the permissible ways of doing it. So, we... What's that? We'll add what I think I'm going to do is we're going to add however many. I'm just going to keep going until we this is okay. Let's finish D at least. We're in the middle of this one topic. Let's at least talk here, and then we'll at least finish it. So what's considered mixed? So number one, like for example, if you have on your kitchen counter, you have an apple and an orange and a banana that you're planning on making a fruit salad with. While they're on your counter, that's not considered a mixture. Nobody would say, even though they're somewhat next to each other, but no one sees that as a fruit salad. They see a banana, and there's an orange, and there's nothing there that, just because they happen to be near each other, doesn't really create it as a mixture. When you put it in a fruit salad, even though you could still see clearly, everything is distinct, but it's now become a mixture. So it's really a little bit tricky as far as, but when it's perceived as part of a group or part of a mixture, then we generally already address it. Now, even if they are very close in proximity, like a platter of cake or cold cuts, they are now put there on purpose. It's not just that they happen to end up on the counter together, like a fruit and an apple. You make a cake platter, you're creating a single entity. This is now a cake platter. It's one entity with lots of different pieces of cake. That's a mixture and would be subject to the rules of Borer. So if you saw a cake in there that you didn't like and you wanted to remove it before serving it, that would be a problem to select that piece of cake out of that platter before serving it, because this has become a mixture of various types of pieces of cake, just like you would have by cold cuts. If you saw a piece that had spoiled in the middle of your... You guys are gonna go anywhere in this rain. You might as well just keep going. So if you see that one piece has spoiled on your platter of cold cuts, that would be a problem to select that out and to throw that away.
Can you just go back to what you're saying about chalent and the number two?
Yeah.
That if you have certain ingredients, even though they're recognizable, you can still put them together.
Like, could you take a potato out of a chunk of Shabbos?
So the starting point in all this would be that's not what we're working. The reason why Boaz is confusing is because what we're defining now is what's considered a mixture where there's a problem.
Okay.
There are times and ways in which you are allowed to select, which we're going to get to. So the right. So the right. We got where do we have to deal with mixtures? And so I'm trying to set up here. I'm glad you brought that up so I can clarify. I am trying to set up now what's considered a mixture, so we have to deal with the laws of Boer, and then we'll go through how we deal with them when you are how you're allowed to pick things out. But it's important to know when I need to deal with it. When do I have something in front of me that's a problem that has to be addressed? The laws of birth. So when you create a single item, an entity, that which is perceived to be a mixture, that becomes an issue. But I need to just get through this, and then I can let those go who want to go, and we'll continue this in further weeks. Meretz Hashem. D3. How mixed do you have to be? If things are attached to each other, that's always going to be considered a mixture, when they're attached. So if you're fat on a piece of meat, peels, shells, all of those things are mixtures. They're considered in halacha as a mixture. So if you want to shell an egg, or shell a nut, or peel an apple, or peel an orange, we'll see how you can do it, but we're going to have to deal with Boer. So for example, one of the rules of Boer, which you might be familiar with, is it has to be close to when you're going to eat it. You would not be allowed to peel an orange before going to shul in the morning, and then coming back and having your orange ready to throw into your salad, because the peel being attached to the orange creates a Boer situation. So when you separate the peel from the orange, even though we learned from when it came to dosh, when it came to separating items, so you're allowed to separate it. It's not, even though it's the way that it grew, but it's not a problem. But you're going to have a boer issue because they're attached and you can't separate them unless you're going to deal with the mechanism, which we'll get to, that you are allowed to do so. And the other issue which has been brought up are items piled on top of each other. That is also considered a mixture. So if they're nicely folded inside a laundry basket, or you have a pile of towels, or you have a stack of different plates, or I think this would be true by your, what's the salad called?
Layer
salad? There's a word for it that Risky always uses, which I don't remember what it's called. Whatever it is. So, like a trifle, yes.
Yeah.
Right, so you have on top, you have lima beans. I don't like lima beans at all, so I want to get rid of the lima beans to get to the rice, which is underneath. That's a boer problem. How do I get past my lima beans in order to get to the rice or whatever it is that I want? All of that, in having been stacked, is going to be a problem of boer and will have to be addressed. That's considered a mixture, whether or not you're stacked, whether or not you are attached, or whether or not you're actually mixed together. The most severe in halacha, the most stringent, is when they're actually mixed together. We'll see as we get next week, Meretz Hashem, the other ways of dealing with it. When they're mixed together is the most severe, but even when they're attached or when they're stacked will all be an issue of boer. That brings us up to the permitted methods for selecting. So you have your notes, you can take a look at them. But we will continue, we'll stop here. Next Tuesday night, I'm already scheduled, we're going to be doing a parenting thing on siblings without rivalry. I will find some other dates, and we will continue with Hilchos Shabbos. We are really going to be a couple left. We have to do Boer, Bishul.
That's
what's that?
What are we going to do? How are we going to start?
Just don't. Yeah.
You can't.
The main thing with setting the table, just very quickly, the only problem you're talking from Friday night to Shabbos morning,
yeah,
after washing the silverware.
Right.
So the simplest way to do that, which I'll just mention now, is once you have this big pile in your sink of silverware, right? That's where the problem comes.
Well, let's say even if you have new stuff.
So new stuff is not a problem because you take it out. Let's start from the top.
You're putting it in somebody's place that you're putting the
fork
in the knife.
Right, but remember, let's just go through this. I'll just do this quickly. If you have to leave, you can leave. But as far as boer is where you take from a mixture and you separate out or sort. If you go into your drawer and the knives and silver and forks and spoons are already separate. They're compartmentalized. So to pull out your knives is fine. You set your table. There's no sorting going on.
But you're sorting as one knife.
Not from a mixture. Remember, there has to be a mixture. Right now, my knives are not a mixture. So that's totally fine because I'm taking from knives and I'm just dividing a lot of knives into a little knives. But boer has to be from a mixture into its distinct parts. But what happens is, let's say you have company Friday night, you throw everything into the sink, you wash it, now you have a mixture. Now I got knives and forks and spoons all together. Now how do I set my table? That's a problem because you can't even just randomly pull something out and go set the table. The only way to do it then is you take a small little pile and there's no prohibition with taking a mixture and separating it if it's not being sorted. So if you take a small pile and you drop it onto the table or throw it onto the table in a way in which they separate, like pickup sticks, exactly, then it's not a problem to do whatever you want to do. And that's a classic method that's used for setting tables if you're going from a Friday night where you already had come. Whereas if it's in the drawer, it's already compartmentalized, it's fine. Because you're taking from a distinct pile of knives, it's fine. If they're already mixed together, then take small piles at a time and sort of like spread it out over the table. Because that's not considered sorting if you're just breaking up a group. Sorting is where you're specifically placing, taking, either pulling one thing out specifically or sorting into piles, but just to make it into what was once a group into a non-group is okay, which we'll get to in more detail next week. But as far as how to set your table, that's how you would do that. You can't? Right.
So, how do you get your dishes?
So, the only example that I saw for that would be one of the svarim mentioned that the I'm assuming you must be talking about a case where you use them Friday night.
Yeah.
They have to be washed. So the eitzah for that is as you're drying them.
What?
In other words, as you dry one, you'll have to pick up a dish from the mixture to dry. Right? That's putting them away. I'm not sorting my dishes. I need to dry my dishes. As you pick one up and you dry it, then you can do whatever you want with it because you're not. In other words, if they were left in a pile like that, then you have a problem. But you're not required to leave it in a pile. If you need to dry them all, so you're.
You can dry them and then stack them according to the size.
Right.
But you can dry them.
And then you set the table, right.
Yeah.
That's why I saw someone that you could do that with your plates.
And the same thing, if you wash your silver things the next day, just plop them on a table.
Right. I would do them in small handfuls at a time is the way to do it. That's the best way to do that. And Borer, again, I just want to reiterate, Borer is one of the biblical prohibitions of sorting. In other words, we all get all worried about how we cook our food on Shabbos, but that's almost always rabbinic because the food's already cooked. We're just talking about some of the rabbinic prohibitions. Setting a table in the world of Shabbos is far more complex and severe than worrying about getting your food warmed up for Shabbos, which is almost always rabbinic at worst. Borer is one of the 39. So that's what we're going to all spend. So we'll continue. There's what to talk about, but I don't want to keep you so late. And I will set a date for Mitzvah another one, and we'll meet next week. Those who are here for Tuesday for siblings with that rivalry, and we'll continue with Shabbos as we go along.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.